If anyone can hear this, we found them. We'd been lost, wandering for days. It seemed like the whole world had disappeared. And then we met a man, and he told us that they had all gone. All gone to AwesomeCon.
Everyone's at AwesomeCon. The district's comic and pop culture convention is back. William Shatner, George Takei, WWE World Champion Seth Rollins, and more. May 29th through 30th at the Washington Convention Center. Buy tickets now at AwesomeCon.com.
That's right. How's everyone going? My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
You guys are listening to the one and only Carolyn and Joe Show. Hey, Carolyn. How are you doing?
My eardrums are busted.
Boom, 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 boom. That's right. You guys were listening. Before that was the AwesomeCon radio commercial. Yes, I did produce that. And I hope you guys enjoy it. You're going to hear it, you know, every single week, every single day, until AwesomeCon comes up.
Do we know what radio stations it's airing on in the local area?
Yes, all of them.
Oh, that's so great. I need to, like, actually listen to the radio to pay attention to that now. I've been doing a lot of
challenge, isn't it?
Books on audio, so I will switch over to the radio occasionally.
In the future,
catch it.
Yeah, in the future, they're going to be able to hijack that, and they're just going to play ads whenever they feel like it.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing.
But we have a guest today. Who do we have in the studio today?
Oh my gosh, we have Michael O'Connell. He is joining us again.
Hey, Mike.
Again. I'm back.
You're back. How's it going?
It is going really well.
I'm happy you're here. I'm happy you're back here. In this, now what? Are we officially spring? Is it warm enough to be spring?
I think we're almost in summer.
Are we?
Well, we had such a long winter, so now it's like all of a sudden summer.
Can't just summer be here? No, it's gorgeous. The flowers are out and the birds are singing and it's so warm. And
it's like great. A Disney cartoon out there.
Yeah.
It is. I tripped over a unicorn coming up here.
Because they're just galloping around.
Yeah,
just like,
it's a lot like Fantasia. It's really strange. You live in a very odd neighborhood.
It's like so perfect. I love having just weirdness around me.
Yeah. Well, then you should be happy.
We live in an animated village.
Yeah.
It's really nice. And also for those of you to check out, Mike has a podcast called It's All Journalism. Just putting that out there right up front.
Thank you.
Check that out.
Thank you.
And continue to listen to this episode of the Carolyn and Joe Show, but then check that out later.
Yes.
Yes.
So do you like the heat? It seems like you like the heat.
It's not the heat, it's the humidity I like. No, I like the heat. I like the heat a lot, actually, because the cold is just not working for me.
Yeah. This isn't working
this
for me.
This is not. No. Yeah, the winter was just a little too much for me. But I'm ready for the heat. Bring it on.
Because as you can tell, like in the studio, even in this whole building, we don't really have air conditioning on. We sort of like wait to that last possible second.
Yeah, until we can't take it anymore.
Until we start like just hating each other. That's literally what it is. That's how we know when to put on the heat or the air conditioning, is when all hell and emotions just flare up. They were like, it must be the temperature.
It's a maelstrom of emotions here.
Yeah.
Yes. In Cartoon Town.
That's
exactly.
Joe and Caroline, or Carolyn... Cartoon Town.
Yes, that's what it's all about.
It's also about Carolyn's News. What's
oh
up, Carolyn?
Oh my gosh, it's Carolyn's News. Okay, guys.
Part.
The main thing to know, of course, is AwesomeCon, which you just heard the commercial for, and that's May 29th, May 30th, and May 31st. It's a 3-day show at the DC Convention Center, and we have tons of panels and other cool stuff. Right off the bat, I know that Friday at 4 p.m., again, this is the May 29th, Friday at 4 p.m., Joe and I will be doing a live Carolyn and Joe Show podcast. So be there.
Oh,
three
and,
times, right?
And
that's the third time we're having it?
And and we've also had it at Annapolis Comic-Con. So we've been doing a few live shows, which have been great. And
but third time at AwesomeCon, right?
Third time at AwesomeCon, yeah. And we have interviewed the Walking Dead cast members previously. So I think we had four Walking Dead members total that we've interviewed. We will have a guest, but I can't say.
It's a secret.
Until it's official.
Until it's official.
And so yes, please join us Friday at 4 p.m. at AwesomeCon, and then on Saturday, another podcast panel. Mike, do you want to announce that?
I'll be happy to announce it, because it's something that both the Carolyn Joe Show and It's All Journalism, as well as several other podcasts, local DC podcasts, are going to be participating in at 4:45 on Saturday, May 30th. Pop Goes the Podcast. I know that off the top of my head, the other podcast it's going to be involved in is Jellyvision, and I know you guys have been on that podcast as well. There are a few other podcasters are going to be on there. We're going to be talking about podcasting, how to be a podcaster, what we've learned from this wonderful experience, this wonderful medium in which we all share our views and rant and rave at the wild maw of the internet. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. And also, I don't know if you guys have talked about this, one of the things that we're going to be talking about at AwesomeCon, and I'm just going to tease about it because I'm not going to go into it at this time, but there is going to be a DC PodFest in November. So we're going to have more details about that at AwesomeCon. We want you to come out, hear us talk about podcasting, but also find out about this event that's coming next fall, that you'll get to see lots of DC podcasters, learn how to podcast, see some performances, and meet some of these people who are talking into your brain.
Yes.
I like talking into your brain. I like that.
I do like that. I'm excited. DC PodFest. I mean, I don't think DC has ever done any podcasting festivals before, or any podcasting events that I know of, and so that should be really exciting.
No, yeah, I'm involved in a group of other podcasters, DC podcasters, and this was one of the things that we had wanted to get together to do. And when I sort of got involved, I thought, we should really be, I wanted to get involved because I knew there were a lot of podcasters in DC, but darn it, there are a lot more podcasters than I thought there were.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty rich community and a lot of different voices, and I think it's really important for people to see that and celebrate that. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to our appearance at AwesomeCon to talk about podcasting, but also talk about the Podcast Fest.
Yes, it's going to be amazing. AwesomeCon. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it's right around the corner. I keep thinking it's like far away, and then all of a sudden, May, and then it's here. So it's coming in a few weeks. I hope you all can join us at AwesomeCon. And also, I think I'm on a social media panel, and Joe is doing a... You're actually going to be interviewing Seth Rollins and Natalya.
I'm going to be the official moderator of the WWE panel.
That's
happening at 6:30 if they're on time on Friday night. So we're gonna have our live Carolyn and Joe show recording.
Yes.
And then I'm gonna take a sip of iced tea or whatever. Then I'm gonna go right into WWE panel.
Cool beverage.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure on me apparently.
But you know what though?
But you know what? I eat pressure. But now I just jinxed it. So I'm just gonna screw up everything.
No. You know what? I have to say, with Seth Rollins, like I'm going to try to catch a glimpse of that panel if I can. It's probably going to be sold out, because everyone that's getting the VIP WWE ticket is going to want to get in there. But I will try to... I just want to actually get a glimpse sometime in the day of Seth Rollins because his arms are amazing.
But see, I have a feeling that he's not really going to be showcasing his arms, because usually when he does appearances, he has sort of a... Not a hipster, but more of like a low-key, has his glasses on.
This is a comic show. It's not a gun show. Remember?
Yes, that's true. So, but I was like,
tell that to some of the cosplayers,
like,
man.
Beth, bring out the gun show, because the females need that, okay? Like, at comic shows, at New York Comic Con, I only saw two good-looking male cosplayers. And I saw a lot of guys that should probably put their shirt on. And, I mean, I know that everyone has different body types and stuff, but it's just like, I don't want to see that.
It's a celebration of body
yes.
types.
Yes. But some of them made me laugh, because, I'm a fan of John Candy, so not everyone has to be fit and trim.
Svelte.
But, yeah.
But I would suspect at AwesomeCon on Friday, you might have an in with somebody who might be involved with the panel.
Oh. Yeah, I know.
I'm just saying.
I just thought of that.
That
oh,
person.
Yeah. Maybe
that
I could
person,
meet him.
Maybe that because person has a needs to bring his assistant.
Because let's be honest. I have a hashtag called 15 Sec Cinema. As in SEC, 15-second cinema.
Yeah, not SE.
Yeah.
Something.
15-second cinema.
That's something you would want to create a
Yeah, that's not something, yeah. But it needs, you know, I'm all about wanting to, like, establish a hashtag. So I do need someone to film the behind the scenes for 15 seconds of either me walking out and meeting our guests. So that might need to happen, of me meeting that, and then in that someone needs to take the photo of me taking a photo, you know, being with the guests. Who knows?
So
I'd like to hijack that.
Where did the 15 seconds come from? Is it a random number you took?
No, it's the limitation of Instagram.
Okay.
So I'm just going to take that.
Okay, cool.
So I have a question for you that I've been meaning to ask
to me?
You. Yes. So Vine, how come you are not on Vine and you're a filmmaker, but you're doing the 15 seconds on Instagram, but you don't do Vine?
It's easy. I have more outlets through Instagram.
Okay.
So it's legit, like, since I have all these...
Have you thought about building your Vine, or...?
Well, since I'm a massive fan of, you know, like, in cinema, the one takes or just the oneers, I actually enjoy the fact of not having to cut. And just, like, you know, because in Vine, you can edit and stuff like that.
But you can also not edit.
Yeah, but let's be honest.
He doesn't even want to have the option. Okay? Can you understand that?
Today...
It's too much pressure.
What's really hilarious about this is, like, today, after I performed over at the open mic in Fairfax, I was like, okay, cool. Now it's time for me to post. So the guy who performed after me, I started my post right when... I started producing my post when he started. And then... I pressed send and he was done. And he performed for 15 minutes. I was like, did it really take me 15 minutes to get this done?
Sounds about right.
Wow. Yeah, so like, the quicker I can make this, the better. So I feel like if I use Vine, there's more choices of editing. So because now I'm mixing motion and photo. So I thought it was going to be easier, but now I just made it more complex.
It's too complex.
But
you need to simplify, sir.
But at the same time, like my Astray J... you know, Instagram account goes to my Facebook, it goes to my Instagram, it goes to my Tumblr. I never used Foursquare, but if I wanted to, I can
you
do
can
that.
Check
I don't even know what that's for.
Foursquare is now Swarm.
Yeah.
It morphed into that about a year ago.
Oh, I'm really behind the times.
But I can already location tag already on Instagram, so I don't need to use Foursquare for it. So there you go. To me, that simplifies my workflow, so I don't have to do many things.
No choices. I want one social media platform that functions, or at least one that functions across multiple platforms.
And to me, it works. And I just do all the... Because, like, you can hashtag in Tumblr, and they'll feed through that. And you can hashtag on Twitter, and that's still fed through that. And for some reason, you can hashtag on Facebook. I don't even know if you can use that, but it still works or something.
I use a lot. I post pictures on Instagram, and I'll send them out through Facebook and Twitter, but then I'll also load photos up onto Swarm, which is the, you know, what used to be Foursquare.
Swarm.
And I use that, and that goes into Facebook and Twitter as well, and also Tumblr.
So much.
Swarm sounds like something that they had, like, in The Office. Remember they were like BJ Novak's BJ Novak's character
Swarm.
He wanted to create something. It's like, it's it goes to this and goes to that, all your social media. I call it Wolf. It's like, is that what the names? Is that you know, where
like
does the name,
cool hip name?
Where does Google come from? How do you make these names?
Google's a number, I think.
Is it Google a number? Is that where they got it from?
I think that's where they got it. I think that's where it is.
Is that where It's a number.
I always thought it was so strange because I remember
why don't you Google it?
No.
Don't Google Google.
Google.
There's a British television show called The IT Crowd, and that was actually one of the warnings that one of the people said. Whatever you do, don't Google Google, because then that will destroy the internet.
Oh,
will
God.
It? Then you know what?
Well,
that's what I want to do.
Well, let's stop it. No. Please don't.
Yeah, but if you break that down, you know, another one's going to pop up.
Another one.
They probably...
A better one.
They have a backup internet.
The internet is probably so strong that it'll probably already have, like, all right, version 2 is up.
No, it'll only be on the Apple Watch. Mm. It's the only place it'll be.
But what if the Russians, like, bomb down our satellites? What will happen?
Who are you, James Bond? What year is this? Is this 1969?
Do you think that could happen? I've read about that it could potentially happen and then set us back to World War II era technology.
Error. Hmm. Error being the word.
E-R-R-O-R.
I find that hard to believe, but who knows? I mean, the zombie apocalypse is just around the corner. The rise of the machines is just around the corner. I mean... We're all going to be downloaded pretty soon, so what does it matter?
Everything will be digitized.
Do you believe that Russia is a threat, or do you think that they're just putting on a show?
Wow.
Digging deep already, man.
Well, I don't know. I haven't been following it very closely, and perhaps I should. But
Putin doesn't wear a shirt. Maybe he should go to Comic-Con.
Maybe he should.
And ride his horse around. That would be amazing.
Yeah, I get the thing. I get the thought that maybe Putin might be a closet brony. I really do.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Don't you think?
That's a great observation.
Yes. I really do. I could have seen him in that documentary. And actually, a famous world leader who we're not going to actually mention, but show this picture with his face blacked out, with some guy with his shirt off. It's Putin.
Wait.
Putin's a brony.
I just got an
email. I think so.
Not that there's anything wrong with being a brony.
I think it's perfectly acceptable.
A live breaking news update at this very moment. Not saying I'm not paying attention to what's happening.
You're the only one who's looking at his phone.
But I'm doing more. I'm promoting live. But while I was promoting live, posting my VidStitch, which I use a lot.
Okay.
But I've gotten news by an executive in command that we can announce it at this very moment.
Oh, who's going to be on our podcast?
So a live exclusive.
Oh my God.
Go ahead and do it.
I'm so excited.
Oh my God.
First, here, just to read. From,
can I read it?
No, there's not. There's much, but just. But I.
Are we still in Carolyn's news?
Yeah. So now. Officially, I'm just going to read the email,
okay.
And then Carolyn can go.
I got comprised. All right, my emotions.
Now the end of this. He just wrote one line, but the end of it makes me think that it's going to happen. But the rest of it makes me think it's happening.
So it's not officially confirmed, or what's the deal?
This is what I got from the main source from the man in charge.
Yes.
The response is: I asked, "Hey, can we promote him now on the show, because we're recording the podcast right now?" That's what I got. As soon as I emailed him right before we started recording.
Okay.
And he goes, "Sure, I think he's cool with it. I think. You take that in consideration."
Mike, what's your journalism?
Well, as a journalist, I would, you know, tend to go towards the person who actually says yes or no.
Well, this is the person that says yes or no.
Well, no, this is the in-between person. This is not the actual person.
It's not the actual
guest. Did the actual person say at some point, do you have verification from this individual that person said, "Sure, no problem, I'd love to do it"?
Yeah, she says. She says, "Sure, I think he's cool with it."
Well, that's what he says.
Yeah,
well,
that's what the organizer says.
Well, the thing,
but not the actual individual.
It's funny because the way it is I got
a second source.
The way it is, though, I'm only going to be in communication with the said source.
That's true.
He's the guest middleman.
The guest we're not in contact with. And even when we did do The Walking Dead, we weren't in contact with the guest beforehand. There was a middleman.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then once
this is a whole shady operation
it's
here.
It's a
clearly.
We go back, but like I'm almost going to be like,
just say it.
I'm going to say, go, because we can always take it back.
Okay.
We're not broadcasting live here.
Yes.
We're recording it live. I'm not going to edit this out because this is drama.
Okay,
this is live drama.
We should put out in advance. Just letting people know that this might not happen, but it probably will, and we hope that it will.
So who is it?
I'm not saying it. It doesn't mean anything if I say it. This is Carolyn's extended version. But this means more to Carolyn than it does to me. Though I really love it. It's like the excitement comes from the person that this is meant, like that this person's work has meant the most, you know, to Carolyn than to me. Though I appreciate it and I love it, and for years I've appreciated the work that him and his team have put together.
It's a team.
We're not going to be interviewing
not
the team.
But there's a key member of the team.
Okay,
Can I give you a build up? Can I give you an intro?
Sure.
Breaking news from the Carolyn and Joe news desk.
Dun dun
now,
dun dun.
Carolyn.
Hi everyone. So, the Carolyn and Joe show will be recording a live podcast at AwesomeCon 2015 on the Friday of AwesomeCon. And at 4 p.m. And our special guest will be, drumroll please.
Oh, I can't believe it. I can't believe she's going to say it.
Billy Martin from Good Charlotte. And he's also a comic book creator.
Yeah!
Woo!
Bam!
Sweet. It feels so good to say that. I will say also, Good Charlotte is probably my favorite band. I mean,
there it is.
I mean, I don't want to like...
I love that band too.
I love a lot of bands, but I think, like, it's hard to be like, this is my number one thing. But I really feel like when it comes down, because I also love My Chem, My Chemical Romance, and I would love to interview any of them as well. So it's kind of like any of them would be great. But Good Charlotte, I think they're my number one.
So if Jay-Z said that I'd be happy to be on your podcast at AwesomeCon, you'd say, oh, that would be nice.
But we have Billy Martin.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I actually would deny Jay-Z over Billy Martin. I would be like, sorry, we have Billy Martin. And for those of you who don't know, he is the guitarist and keyboardist for Good Charlotte.
I hate these musicians who can't make up their mind.
Yeah, he does it all. He does it all. And he loves Tim Burton. He's an artist. And we tabled actually across from him, a little bit diagonal, not directly across, but pretty much looking at him last year, which was not like, it wasn't odd or anything. I wasn't like shaking or whatever. But every time I kept looking up, I was like, oh, there he is. And it was just interesting because I'm like, oh, now he's doing what we're doing, which is pretty cool, you know. And he's working also on Ninja Turtles now.
Oh, sweet.
Is he
writing? Is he drawing?
He's drawing.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. Neat. And I remember last year he had like a really cool Frozen prints out there. So yeah, guys, definitely. I don't know all the days. I don't know if he's going to be there all 3 days at the show. I'm assuming he is because he does do a lot of shows across America now. So yeah, check him out as well. In addition to our podcast, you can also see him on the show floor in Artist Alley, most likely.
And you guys are going to be in Artist Alley, right?
Yes.
As always.
Are. Yes.
People could come by. Not as always.
Not as always.
Some other times are not.
As sometimes.
Yeah.
Yes, as sometimes. And so we'll be around. And I have to actually look at the map and figure out where Billy Martin is going to be in association to us. Just, I don't know. I just want to make sure I'm not like, oh, I have to look at you all day. It's kind of interesting though, because I mean, I'm a fan, but I guess someone would be like, oh, she's a fangirl, but I'm a fan, but I'm not like, I sincerely am not like, in love with them. Like I would acknowledge like, okay, for example, I am, you know, I have a crush on Dave Navarro. Like I will just put that out there.
Acknowledged.
Yeah.
And so, he actually responded to
yes,
you.
And
as
he,
I remember.
Yes. He has, you know, I've been in communication with him. But I will officially say, like, I don't have a crush on any of the Good Charlotte guys. So, like, I feel like it's okay. I'm like a real Band-Aid. I'm not like a
Is it Band-Aid?
Yeah, Band-Aid. I'm not like a what's it called?
Groupie?
Groupie, thank you. Groupie. I'm not a groupie with them. I'm like, seriously, like, I'm into the music. I dig everything they do. I'm down with them. Like, I relate to them. And I think they do great things. So, and I also think it's cool that Billy is an artist on top of it. Because, I mean, like, they rose to success so quickly, like, right out of high school. So, I don't think, like, they were even considering college as an option. They were just like, no, we're gonna make this band.
We got a band.
Yeah. And so, like,
why would they?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that at that point, it's just, like, go with the band, you know? But, I mean, he didn't go to art school necessarily, but he, you know, he has really great skills, and so, you know, he is a true artist. So
this makes me, see, now, this is not a dilemma, but now me as, like, a producer looking at how we're going to do this show, it makes you wonder, maybe I should just throw the ball to Carolyn. Like, this will be the show
God.
Where Carolyn will be more centric. Because there's a...
I don't want to... I'm going to be like, oh my gosh. But then, you know what else is really cool? Because back at VCU, at the school newspaper, I was doing cartooning there.
Yes.
But occasionally, I was able to write articles. And most of my articles were about music shows.
But what was your first article?
Well, I don't know what the first
one was. Well, the first one that had
the
name.
My first interview was a phoner with Chris Wilson, who was a previous drummer with Good Charlotte.
Yes.
And Billy and Billy was in the background, like, giggling and laughing and stuff. Like, hanging out with him as he was doing the phoner. So I was like, oh, man, in a way, I kind of halfway interviewed you. Because I remember he gave a couple, like, shout-outs in the background or something.
Did you talk to him at the last con?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, and I actually acknowledged, like, I was just like, hey, I'm, you know, across the street from you, and I was like, hey, I know you're not here for... I got him to sign... he has, like, a comic book. I got him to sign the first issue of it, and, like, I was like, hey, can you sign this? And I was like, hey, I know you're not here for Good Charlotte, but I want to let you know, like, I appreciate everything you guys do. Like, you're awesome. And I was like...
Were you playing, like, real cool? Like, you know, I'm a creator, too. I got a booth over here.
I was kind of doing it a little bit like that, but then,
yeah, I know these fans come up and all they ask you these things, but
I mean, I get that too. Like people are like, oh, I do this too. And it is kind of repetitive because it's like everybody here does this.
I've got my own comic book.
Yeah.
I've got my own podcast. That's
exactly. The podcast thing. It's like everybody has their own podcast now. So it's not even, I hate to say it. It's kind of not even like special anymore. So how can we make, that's actually, we should get into
well,
that.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, how do you make it special? By being special.
By being special.
Being
yes.
special. No, yeah. Everybody's got a different voice. Let's hear what everybody's voices are. Put the effort in. Get out and do stuff.
And also
create comics.
I think a lot of people too, like, they say they have a podcast, but then they have very limited number of episodes.
Yeah.
Have you ran across that as well?
I've only met sort of a handful of other podcasters. So my experience is that I've met a few people who have a lot of episodes, like you guys,
mm-hmm.
Like Jennifer, who does Jellyvision.
Yes.
And
a consistent.
Yeah, no, it means a lot. I think if you put it in, you know, put in the effort week in and week out, and you sort of reach a certain level of technical proficiency, I think that says something. But you know, those people at like NPR who did that. You know, that Serial thing, that was only 12 ish episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they did a lot of research going into that, too.
I think they put,
I think that was like a whole investigation.
I think they might have done a little work on that.
Yeah.
That. Okay, let's just say that.
But you know what? I enjoyed Serial, and I'm not dissing them, but also, I don't understand like the whole appeal that it got. Truthfully, I mean, I didn't think it was bad or anything, but I just think it's a little, I don't want to call it overrated, but I just didn't get into it as much as other people did.
You know, the thing is that we've all been in sort of the community for a couple of years, and you a few years longer than I have. And I think we could point to lots of different podcasts that we've listened to, you know, Marin or Nerdist or whatever. But those certainly are, you know, heck of big audiences, but you know, there's a certain segment of the society that just doesn't pay any attention to podcasts. And for whatever reason, that broke big. And I think part of it, I mean, NPR is NPR. They've got a huge bullhorn to promote this stuff.
Yeah.
So that first episode was on This American Life, which is like a huge radio show and a huge podcast. And so I think that opened the door for a lot of people to what podcasting was. And so they gravitated towards that. This is not to diss them. This is not to say that what they did wasn't good and they don't,
so
they shouldn't deserve the accolades.
They got exposure.
Yeah, they got more exposure. And I think that became sort of the darling because the media at large likes things simple. They like, oh, this is a big breakaway podcast. Podcasting is back because of Serial. Well, anybody who's doing a podcast, Adam Carolla, knows that podcasting's been around for a while, and it's just but the mainstream has not acknowledged it, and so suddenly here was something, a little darling that popped up that everybody acknowledged. Again, not that it wasn't bad, not that it was bad or anything. It was just, you know, not that it didn't deserve it. I mean, it you know, it set out to do what it set out to do, and it appeared to accomplish that in its 12 episodes. So, I mean, there are lots of different podcasts out there, lots of people who are, you know, we were at that the comic shop for Free Comic Book Day a few days ago, and there was a podcast out front.
Yeah.
Did you talk to those guys?
I mean, I've always talked, I didn't talk to them on the show, but I mean, I knew those guys already, you know, heading into it, and I didn't, you know, there's a time, you know, I'm not gonna say I don't pay attention to everyone, but it's so hard to pay attention to everyone. Because it's
what are your go-to shows, Mike?
This is like uber nerdy.
Did you ever like listen to them all the time and you never miss an episode, or you try to catch up?
I go back
much?
And forth because sometimes I get real sick of some of them if I've been listening to them a lot, and I sort of let them back up for a while. For a long time, I was listening a lot to Kevin Smith and all the different ones he had, but eventually I got kind of like over.
It was too much.
There was a lot.
Like, it's like a tidal wave of it. And then I thought the stuff he did when he was doing the movie, you know, sort of the behind the scenes stuff was really kind of interesting when he could talk about that. What's the guy's name? Dan. I'm going to kick myself. The guy who does Hardcore History, which is a podcast that comes out like once every 3 months.
Oh, wow.
It's 4 hours long.
Wow.
And
it's a big podcast.
And it's a really good, he just talks about history. So this week he dropped his podcast. I listened to it for four hours straight, but over a couple of days. And it was great. He was finishing up his cover, you know, his multi-part
epic about the First World War. And it was just really well researched, and he's a really great storyteller, and it's just one guy talking, and it's great. But like I said, it's like a rare treat, because it takes him 3 months, you know, 2-3 months to, to research and write the thing. So, you know, but yeah, I listen to Nerdist, I listen to Marin. Marin's really good as as an interviewer. And I like that he interviews all types of people, musicians and musicians and comedians and actors.
Mostly creative people.
Creative people. And the problem, you know, when you compare him to something like the Nerdist, I think that one's sort of hit and miss with the type of people that they get on. They spend, you know, sometimes it's like, the comedians are really good, or they're not really good. And but Marin's pretty, whoever he gets in there, he generally is able to find whatever that interesting conversation is going to be and pull it out of him. So, mm-hmm. I enjoy that. And I was listening to a couple of Adam Carollas recently as well. So, Gilbert Gottfried has a great podcast.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. I love his voice. It's so sexy.
It's sexy. He's a dream. That's the voice you hear as you go to sleep.
Yes. I love it.
His Amazing Colossal podcast is one of the funniest things out there right now.
I need to check in with that more. I always kind of forget about that.
And now they're doing a supplementary one where they review the two hosts, Gilbert and Frank Santopadre, recommend movies, obscure movies. Mm-hmm. I was listening to that today. One was Freaks and the other was some obscure Bill Murray movie. Hmm. But they're really smart and they're funny, and then they get all of these, you know, old, I mean, that's the joke, is that all the people that you get on there are all really old people. But they're all very funny. And they're very funny, and they're very interesting conversations.
I think the old people need an outlet.
There we go.
Because I spend many times listening to, like, you know, when you're at like a party, sometimes I go right towards like the old people and hear what they want.
Sometimes I think,
Grandpa,
I'm a 90-year-old man inside this body.
Wow.
Because where else are they going to get a chance to like tell their story? I love when they're excited about it, or when they tell us how bad today is and stuff like that. And I'm just like, it's
kids,
right.
That's today, right. These millennials, these whatever.
And they got some good wisdom to tell you, you know, like, no, don't worry about that.
Curmudgeon radio.
They're like, in 20 years, you'll be over that problem.
The internet, such a fad.
Actually, I was telling you, I heard that, I can't remember the original source, but there is a old folks home in California, and a lot of them are former, I guess, filmmakers.
Yeah.
And they have this whole ensemble where they have like a...
Like from the golden age?
I don't know what age, but they have their own television network hooked up within the facility of the old folks home, and so they have their own programming.
See, isn't that the truth? Remember,
I think that's awesome.
Remember, people are like, when are you going to retire? Is there any retirement? That's proof that filmmakers, you don't retire.
No.
Even in a retirement home,
and they actually recruit people to like be on their shows or do everything, and then it's all like whatever. What is it called? Closed circuit TV,
yes.
Like broadcasting
was
from
it
them.
CCT. What is it?
Yeah. So let me ask you, Joe. What you're as a filmmaker? Who do you like as a filmmakers now?
Who like today, or who just
today.
The ones that always inspired me?
Oh, the ones who inspired you, but also the ones that you like today.
I mean, today, like, I really love, and what's really bad is I'm not good with, like, the names of these guys. I'm horrible. Because
that guy.
Or guys.
Or girl.
Well, it's like, because they're the three amigos, right? The three amigos of directing right now. It's the Inari Tutu,
Del Toro.
Guillermo del Toro, and... The dude that
and
I,
the other guy.
The other...
and the other Mexican.
Literally, for people to have a visual of what they
Robert
did.
Robert Rodriguez?
No. I mean... It's a,
appreciate him for his.
He was a digital pioneer, but he was, to me, Rodriguez is part of the Sundance Kids. So that was Kevin Smith, Soderbergh, Rodriguez, and Tarantino.
And Rodriguez
those guys.
Is really good at low budget, keeping things low
he
budget.
Was, to me, he championed having. You know, he was one of the first people to do digital filmmaking, saying like, you don't have to shoot in film. We can do all these amazing things. But today, like for people that have visual. The guy who directed Birdman, the guy who directed Gravity, and the guy who directed Pacific Rim. Those are the people that
his
I really...
His initials are like AC.
Yeah.
I don't know if that helps,
and
but...
Those guys are amazing to me, and I really love that.
Real visual storytellers.
Really, and like great, and they take chances. Like, I love that... I love filmmakers that take chances, because there's a time when Tarantino and like the Sundance class, that, whatever that class was, it felt like... Like, it felt like you were causing, like, you're dangerous when you're a filmmaker. Now it's more like, oh, cool, you're so hip and cool to make films. But I loved it where people were always you know, like Scorsese, he has a firestorm.
Sure.
Tarantino, you're like, you look at that and you're like, man, but that's badass. It's dangerous. They're causing trouble making films. And I, as a filmmaker, miss that. It's now it's sort of like, not saying Wes Anderson's not awesome. He's great. But I feel like, you know, to me, you...
I haven't really enjoyed a Wes Anderson film in a long time.
But there's no danger to it.
No, there's every corner's got a nice, is rounded off and smooth.
Yeah, and
I
like,
mean, it's, you know, it's where's Rushmore? I saw Rushmore recently.
Yeah,
that he did that, right?
Yeah, he did. Okay. He did that with Jason Schwartzman.
And that's a brilliant movie.
It is.
It's an incredible movie.
But I missed that rebellion.
Yeah,
like to me, and like when I make a film, I want to have, I think it's, you know, the commentary is really important, but it's hidden with characters, you know.
I remember the first time I became aware of Robert Rodriguez was he was on the Howard Stern show and he was talking about getting the money for El Mariachi, his first film. And did you hear the story of how he got money?
I read the book, the Rebel Without a Crew.
Yeah, he got the financing by like participating in medical experiments.
Exactly, yeah.
And the way he sort of described it was, well, you go in there for like a weekend or a week or whatever, and so I'd had all this time to do the writing and everything. And he's like, well, what did they do? He said, sometimes they gave you drugs. Sometimes one time they were trying to test out this like salve to see if it would heal wounds quickly. Yeah. And they said, so what they actually did is they had this like staple thing that would like take a chunk out of your skin, and you put salve on it and sort of sit there. So, you know, and that's what he, it's like, yeah, you know, okay, you want to put a thing in my arm? Okay, fine. Then pay me. And, you know, in 5 days,
but how do you even know if that's safe? You know, like that's what the testing is.
They're doctors.
See, to me, that's what's amazing. It's like the lengths that he would go to make a movie. Like what I love about Robert Rodriguez, and this was like when, you know, when he was up on the rise and his thing was getting people to recognize that you don't have to have a massive budget to make a movie. He was like, you know, he was telling me how to like literally, there's like these videos online. I don't even know where it came from, but it was like he walks into a classroom telling people,
isn't
like it was a
10 minute
film school.
Yeah.
And he's like, if you want to be creative, take the camera off the tripod because everyone has it on a tripod. You don't have to do that. Or he's like, really, you want to make a film?
Mix up the rules.
Yeah. Close your eyes and envision your film and then write that down. And like, to me, that really spoke, you know what I mean? Even though his films didn't blow my mind, though I love Sin City and I love the drive and I love the rebellion of it. But like the fact, like it blew my mind that he has his suite, his edit suite in his house. He can do music, he can do all that. It hinders you a little bit because you gotta do everything. But like to me, I saw that and it's like, dude, it's really possible. This man is doing it and he's making millions.
And also, in addition to that, he's an excellent chef and he does a 10-minute cooking school.
Yeah, that blew my mind. So I was like, that dude is cool. That guy. I mean, I can't shit on him for his movies because that's subjective.
He's also
subjective.
Handsome.
Sure, you know what I mean.
So I just want to point that out.
What's not to love?
There's nothing not to love with him.
It's kind of like, have you seen the Louis TV show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
The fact that he does everything on that. He writes, he directs.
Yeah.
He
acts in it. It's a great show.
And he edits it.
Yeah.
He gets all the video together and he goes back and he gets put his laptop, gets it in Final Cut. And puts it together. So, I mean, it's a creative experience of, you know, all these tools being in our hands. That's why we're podcasting. That's why we're drawing. And
that's exactly what it means to me. That's what that Sundance class reminded me of. That's why that was so awesome, because all those guys doing it on their own, making big. Soderbergh shoots his own stuff, you know what I mean, makes, you know, he edits his own thing. That's the same thing with Kevin Smith, though he can't shoot, but he does edit his own thing, writes it and does all that. Everyone from that class.
Yeah. And I think one of the important things that, you know, I think you sort of touched on that when you were talking about Robert Rodriguez going around to the classes and telling it. You know, I've run into people who wanted to do podcasts and they would add, you know, oh, yeah, I really want to do a podcast or something, or I want to do this, or, you know, and I've been an editor for a long time. I want to write. I want to do this type of thing. And really, at the end of the day, it comes down, you just got to do it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You can't just keep putting it off or finding an excuse not to do it. Well, I don't know how to,
you know, I don't know how to edit audio. I don't know how to do a program. I mean, do you know how to do Google? Do you know how to look on YouTube?
There's exactly. like tons of it's, tutorials yeah. now. And also on top of it, I feel like, and I don't know how these younger kids like coming out
these
of.
Kids these today. Younger kids.
These kids today coming out of high school
these delinquents.
And college.
These.
Like, I don't know, you know, maybe they're relying everything to be like, I need to get a job at NPR or what, or some big thing they've heard of. But really what it comes down to is like DIY, dudes. Do it yourself. Because yeah. you can research equipment, you know, maybe work a few jobs and get enough money to purchase the equipment, and then after that you're golden.
And I feel like with podcasting, that is legit something that if you really want to, it's physically not demanding. It's all about work ethic as compared to filmmaking. Like, I've been burned so many times where people are like, oh yeah, I have this idea, let's go make a film, and I'm like, I'm all gung-ho about it. I can make it happen, and they're the ones that flakes out. And I'm just like, yeah. because it's such a team thing. But literally, if you want to, you can record an interview on your phone.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then you can email the interview to yourself and then post it up there. That's yeah. it. Yeah. If you want to break it down, you know?
Yeah, no, there are programs where you can use it. You edit on your iPhone. You can record and you can do all the editing there. Add up, you know, you've got multiple files and you can move like music around and cut up pieces and put them together and then upload it to YouTube or wherever. You know, real quick ways to do these things, and it's not magic. I mean, if you have the drive, I mean, it is a huge. You know, we can't. You know, there's some people it's easy for them to do it. Yeah. There are other people that it is a barrier. I mean, I've dealt with fear in my life in trying new things, and it's just you eventually just gotta just tell yourself, you know, it's better to be doing something than to be afraid of something.
It's yeah. It's to me legit. It's. You know, I've always had this, I don't know what you say, but I have this passion that every single day you should make progress on something. You yeah. know what I mean? And that's literally what it is. You should every single day take a step forward. It doesn't matter how big the step or how small, you're taking a step forward that way. And if you've done that, you're a success.
Yeah. Carol and I were, before we started recording, we were talking about the creative process and about, you know, creating comics or creating podcast or writing or because I, you know, I'm a journalist, I have to write stuff, and sometimes you just get so caught up in the it has to be perfect, it has to be perfect. Well, it doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be good. You should definitely put your best effort into it, and sometimes you try and you do things and you fail, but it's okay to fail because then you get something to learn from, and that's something to sort of mark where you are in your progress. I mean, all these people, these filmmakers you talked about, they all failed.
I mean, we're failing every single day.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like your failures is what makes those little quirks yeah. about you. You know what I mean?
And let me tell you, the more times you fail and get up and do something, the easier it is to get up and do something.
I actually think the more you fail too, is that that's actually what builds the creative. Because if you don't fail, yeah. what do you think you're accomplishing?
Yeah, no.
What are you doing?
I forget who it was. I was reading something. Somebody said almost the exact same thing, that they didn't see themselves as a success, that they'd spent, because when they finally had their overnight success, that was after 20 years.
Yeah, and then everyone's
hitting their head
like,
against the wall.
Oh, yeah. They just all of a sudden made it.
Yeah,
it's right. Like, yeah, they've been working on it forever.
And though I hate them, well, I don't hate them, but I don't listen to their music at all. Like Maroon 5. Maroon yeah. 5.
I don't hate them.
I just don't care for them. But like, you know, they got like that one year, they got like the breakout artist.
But wasn't
that
album yeah. already out for like 3 years?
It was like out for like so long.
3 or 4 dude. Years, and then all of a sudden it's like Maroon 5. And it's like, what? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like they do. Yeah.
But also there was that other filmmaker that was doing District 9 animations.
Bloomfield.
But I guess he was like discovered all of a sudden by like Spielberg and all them, and then like people were like, man, out of the blue, this guy was found. You know, that was like the headlines type thing. It's like, now he's working for Spielberg. And then like I actually liked his short film that I saw online, so I was like, who is this guy? And so I did more research. I went to his website and looked at his portfolio. I'm like, dude, this guy's been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, it's not all of a sudden, like, they made it sound like some guy just all of a sudden started like playing around on the computer and made films, and then now Spielberg noticed him. And yeah. it's like, don't make it sound like that. All these journalists like try yeah. to get the headline like
yeah
that.
Well, journalists are real jerks. But you know, this sort of idea of like, you know, I don't know, guerrilla filmmaking, you know, this has been around for a while, actually.
Yeah, that's cinema, I mean, birthday.
Yeah, if you look back at you know, George Romero, who was like an industrial filmmaker who got his friends together in Pittsburgh and made, you know, one of the most significant horror movies of all time, Night yeah. of the Living Dead. And then he went on to make other films. And there's this other guy whose name escapes me who did Carnival of Souls. And he was just this, I mean, he was making business films, you know, like for industrial films, you know, for different companies and stuff. And he just on the weekends, he decided that he needed a creative outlet. So he created this really great, you know, low budget horror movie called Carnival of Souls. So if you haven't seen that, it's black and white. It's kind of cool.
Sounds cool.
See, my theory is this: equipment doesn't matter. The only thing that really matters is the voice.
Yeah.
The voice will shine through. And then, you know, to me, that's really legit what it comes down to. You can be competent and you can have it out there, but no one's going to notice anything unless you have something to say and your voice is strong and doesn't just blend in with the rest. It has to stand out somehow.
Yeah. I heard somebody talking about Ed Wood.
The filmmaker, the director. Okay,
for the longest time, you were calling him the world's worst filmmaker.
Oh yeah,
but you know, the thing was, he made films.
Yeah,
there are plenty of other people who never try or tried and never got to the point that he did,
or the just criticized.
He had ambition. He had drive. He just didn't have any particular talent. And that was, you know, that's no fault of him, but at least he was able to, he had a voice.
Yeah.
It was really not a particularly good voice, but, you know, he set out to do things. And I thought that was sort of one of the things that sort of came out of the Ed Wood movie is that, you know, this is a guy, weird, but kooky, but he had this vision, and that's what he was sort of going. He had that creative spirit. He just didn't have the talent to match it.
And that movie is in my top five, by the way.
What, Ed Wood?
Ed Wood? Yeah.
That's a great movie.
The Tim Burton Ed Wood. And like, that's
maybe
what I
feel
like.
Maybe you can talk to Billy Martin about that.
Maybe I can. I'm going to pull that card. I'll slide that card in.
Okay.
But I feel like that's literally what it is. It's like, and it's really, this really is something I despise, is that there's always people who are criticizing people's work who don't do anything.
They're
haters. And the easiest way to combat that is like, okay, what did you do today? Did you make a film today? No. Don't talk. You know what I mean? That's like when I, and this is the harshest way I can say it. That's what it's like when I see a person that's like out of shape criticizing someone that's in shape for working out. I mean, like, well, what, you know what I mean? It's sort of like, okay, I always feel like you can't really criticize something unless you've tried to do what they do, because then you get that view, you know?
Yeah.
And also, like,
unless you're the president.
But this discussion about like failure is really interesting because I don't know. It really does seem like that's how you learn. But as an artist, you want to make everything most artists wants to make everything perfect. You know, like, oh, I need to do this. This needs to be right, and I need to do perfect. But
though I do like Dadaism a whole lot, though.
And
I like
and
sporadicness in my
exactly,
artwork.
Exactly. But as I'm getting older too, I've learned that you have to kind of just let go of your preciousness. Like sometimes I'm like, oh man, like everything has to be perfect, every little detail, and like blah blah blah. But then now sometimes I'll just draw on like lined paper because it actually makes me not care about the paper, and then my drawing is more loose and it looks better, like at least for sketches, and that helps me a lot because it's more intimidating if you look at this fresh white paper and then you feel like you're ruining it.
What's the theory? Are you more or less? Are you like a? Are you focused on the single piece or are you focused on the body of work? Like the portfolio.
I think it's a portfolio, but also like at the moment, if I'm on the body of work, then just the body work. But also I will point out that some people might think that my most quote unquote successful projects are, you know, like, wow, look, this is the most successful project, but I don't necessarily think it's the best project that I've done. And like even Mike was saying, like, you know, sometimes you can win awards. We were talking about like awards before the podcast, and that might not necessarily be, it might be like, it's good to be recognized, but that might not necessarily be your best work.
But see, I like Picasso. I'm a fan of Picasso because you can also see the journey. I like being able to
the blue period.
I'm like, oh, there's the blue period. Oh, there's the pink period. And now there's the cubism area. I actually enjoy following the journey of seeing the journey of an artist. You know what I mean? I like seeing that.
I was really lucky when I was in college that, at Indiana University, it was like maybe even like the second week I was at college, they had a field trip up to the Chicago Art Museum. They had an exhibit of Toulouse-Lautrec, and it was the first time that they had brought hundreds of different pieces of his artwork into one location. And it was an incredible show because you saw not only like the different paintings, many of them famous, many of them not famous, that he had done over his lifetime, but you would actually see like starter sketches that he would do on like brown paper,
yeah.
of like characters in a larger piece, and he would they'd have those on the wall, and you could see the progression of how he was creating a piece, and then in the end you'd see the final piece, and it was just it was a really kind of insightful for me into the idea of the creative process, and also the body of work is like you can't, I mean it's important to concentrate on the product, especially if you're, you know, I write stories. They have to have a certain, you know, end result. If I'm writing a news piece, and I imagine sort of the same thing with you, Carolyn, if you're doing a job, there's a certain standard that you have to achieve and reach and to service the person that you're creating it for. But then there's also your own personal measure. But at the end of the day, you know, what drives your creative spirit is what you see value in for yourself, knowing that you're progressing, that, you know, if you start seeing yourself stagnate, then, you know, I know sometimes I feel like, gosh, this is the only type of stuff I'm writing. I need to do something different. Mm-hmm. And then I try to change it up.
Yeah.
Cause you don't want your work to turn into a swamp or just stays in there and just gets dirty.
Or you don't want to be too comfortable.
That's the comfort is almost like the biggest fear of an artist sometimes when you're that's why commercially
achieve like comfortableness a couple times, you know, maybe I don't know about other people, but for me, maybe like a couple times a year I'm like I'm comfortable, but then like something happens or like I have to shake things up just to be uncomfortable,
yeah, because then you can discover
to get a different perspective.
Yeah, because otherwise it's just like you're doing the same thing again.
Yeah, sameness is really kind of... I really liked what you said before about letting go of your preciousness. Because, I feel that sometimes, that you get so caught up in a... And eventually you just gotta... I just gotta get away from this. I gotta divorce myself from this. I gotta leave this behind and work on something else.
Yeah.
That you can't just endlessly work on one project.
Like, during
until it's quote-unquote perfect.
But see, like, to me, like, I have met, like, a lot of people who say, like, I'm a perfectionist. I'm never... From music to filmmaking to any of that. And they put themselves... They claim themselves to be perfectionists.
Do they never get anything done?
Well, see, to me, that's always... That's the
perfection
fear.
Is nothing.
I've seen people work on pieces for, like, years. And that's the fear. I'm just like, okay, so is it never coming out? Like, even with, you know, Chinese Democracy from... with Guns N' Roses, I'm like, oh, you've been working on this for 6 years, and when it comes out, it's never going to be what people expect it to be. So that's always that fear. You know what I mean? It's like you're building your own hype. Is it ever going to get done?
Yeah, but think of somebody like Orson Welles, who did Citizen Kane.
One of my champions.
Which, you know, he came out of radio, and he had this talent and this reputation, and they pretty much gave him the keys to the kingdom. Make the film you want to make.
Yeah.
Gave him complete creative freedom, and he made this masterpiece. And then he started making movies, and the studios started, you know, editing and taking control away from it. And eventually he sort of, you know, he lost the system that would allow him to create the types of work that he would like to do. Occasionally he would do things like Touch of Evil, where they sort of just... Well,
but they still took that away from him.
Yeah. But you know, that was a movie that you know, I don't even think he was the first director on it.
No, he was the first. And then they took it away, and then they made their own cut. And then he gave notes to what he wanted to do, and they're just like, whatever.
Well, you sure isn't that? Well, I know that there was one movie he filmed, Magnificent Ambersons,
yeah,
which is like
they
a
just
beautiful
took him
film.
Away.
Yeah, they just took it away.
Well, but, see, you know why? Because to me, Orson Welles is the original filmmaker troublemaker.
Yeah. Well, he was well, see, that's what happens when you try to put a creative person into a very structured environment.
And he had some hype from theater doing all that.
Right. And there was a lot of resentment against him. And then there was a lot, he created a lot of trouble because of the subject matter he chose to do with Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
Sort of alienated himself with the Hearst supported studio system. But you know, he went on and he did other things in his life, you know, like wine commercials and whatnot. But
he did a lot of acting.
He did a lot of acting. He did a lot of stuff on stage. When he wasn't supposedly, before he was in you know, he became famous with the War of the Worlds, he was doing like Broadway. He was doing like Shakespeare on Broadway. Yeah. It was like groundbreaking stuff. But and he was doing that in his early 20s.
Have you ever seen the movie F for Fake?
I started watching it. I didn't finish it, but I do want to go back to seeing it.
I want
to
see it.
To me, it's a great film because it makes you want, because is it a documentary, is it a mockumentary, or is it just a commentary? But what I like about that is I don't think he's lying where he's like saying, yeah, I've never directed a film, or I've never directed a stage play, but I faked my way into it and I just acted like, okay, this is what we do. And then he created new ideas doing that. basically just saying like his whole entire way up, he was just fake it till you make it.
Yeah, no, he was, yeah, it was a fraud.
Yeah.
It was, well, and then he's not necessarily the first person who's ever said that. That yeah. He's kind of like, well, but you know, I think that's the, it's the, I forget what they call it. There's this psychology where that we really all have within ourselves, that we have this feeling that we're going to be discovered.
Yeah.
That somebody's going to find out that we're really insecure, imperfect people, that, you know, we're so busy, so anxious to create this facade of competency, of success, that we're just moments, but we always feel we're moments away from somebody discovering that we're really just these little people inside.
Yeah.
And I think that's incredibly common, and I don't think it's a thing a lot of people sort of acknowledge, because they're so caught up in the idea of, you know, I've got to maintain whatever I am, I got to represent what I am, I got to fit, you know, you suddenly get all this success at work and you're like, you know, I shouldn't have gotten this.
Yeah.
You know, I just better keep moving. Otherwise somebody's going to find out that I don't deserve this. And it's more of an insecurity type of thing.
It definitely is, because there's two ways you can either, one, live up to your hype, or the other way of just saying like, I don't know if I deserve this, and you know, like that, like the insecure way.
Feels like it sounds weak, you know, a little bit, because it's like you just got to. Like, I feel like you just got to own it.
But then there's that perception of like, oh,
but maybe internally you might think that, but I don't feel like you can display that.
But also,
be like, there's always like those people that are like they get a compliment, like, oh, you look pretty today, and then they're just like, oh, well, you know, this old thing.
Yeah,
I didn't comb my hair.
But
you know,
is that a play though? To be like, well, I have an ego
for comments.
Yeah.
Or compliments.
They dismiss the compliment. Like, you could genuinely be like, oh, you look nice today. And then they're just like, oh, yeah, I got this shirt for $2. I look like shit. You know, like, it's like, oh, you just dismissed my compliment.
Or also another way I feel like that humans can dismiss that is by just returning a compliment. Like, oh, look, your hair looks so great. Oh, I love that belt. So just people are just patting each other in the back all day long.
Yeah.
So you can dismiss it while not acknowledging it, but accepting it, but like passing the savings back on. So now they got to deal
passing the
savings. Or just say thank you. That was very nice of you to say that. You know.
But then they'll judge you.
What do you mean?
Yeah, they'll judge you on that thank you.
You think I'm lying?
They're like, why'd they give me a compliment back? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because some people give compliments to get the compliment back.
I just say, oh, thanks. Like whatever. Yeah. I'm just like,
but just like John Draper, if you don't like the conversation, change the subject. So you just change the subject.
So are you caught up on?
We're watching this last season live. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. No,
two more episodes.
Yeah, this has been really no. It's just one more episode before the season.
Oh yes,
they always try to messing with me
mess
on that.
Mess up the number. And do you think the series finale is going finale is going to be a longer episode than an hour?
It better be a night. It'll be a night of Mad Men. It has to be a night of Mad Men.
I don't know. The last couple of episodes have sort of felt like they're doing their
character exits.
Yeah, their character exits.
Yeah, like whenever a character said bye, I was like, oh, I guess we're not going to see them again.
It's like the last episode where like Ted is sitting at the big table in his shirt sleeves with his bock lunch, this big smile on his face because he's exactly where he wanted to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, Don, that's not Don, so he's going to go off. And
he's like, peace.
Peace out.
So are you a fan of the show? I'm assuming since you watch it seems like you watch it.
I enjoy it. Yeah, I don't know if I don't know what being a fan is anymore. But yeah, I really like it. I mean, it's a really great show.
Like, a fan to me is like if you go online and just look up Don Draper quotes and stuff like that. Or you like recollect or you quote him like I do.
No. Yeah, or wear Brooks Brothers suits.
I think Joan and
Peggy are like really interesting characters to me, and I don't exactly know why, maybe because I work in advertising, but I feel like they are two women that sometimes it's hard to really like some women on TV just because they're so stereotypical, but Joan and Peggy, like, there's something about them that has extra spark for me.
They don't appear complex, but they are actually rather complex, and I've actually liked kind of what's happened to Joan over the last few episodes, because the last episode where things sort of went against her And she was on in the big company, and I was almost kind of wishing that they had one of the characters who knew her sort of, you know, say, well, I guess, you know, they found out, because we have to remember that she got to the position where she is because she actually slept with somebody.
Yeah.
So
saved the company.
But she'd gotten to she'd reached a level where that wasn't enough for to be qualified to be equals with these other people, and whether they knew the story behind it or not, they somehow sensed that that's who she wasn't, And so when she tried to, you know, throw her big stick around to cause trouble, they were kind of like, you know, you're not who you are.
Your weight doesn't count around.
Yeah, your weight. Yeah. You know, well, I think they even said, you know, I don't know, you know, if you got this because somebody willed it to you or what, which in a sense, I guess, is sort of what happened.
But, which was also that episode was a very painful episode.
Oh, yeah. Well, but, you know, you look at that in contrast to Peggy, who, you know, has had to sort of...
She's had to earn it.
She's had to scratch and crawl her way out. And, you know, Joan just sort of looks down her nose at Peggy quite often, you know, seeing herself as sort of an equal or maybe above Peggy, but not acknowledging the fact that she had to, you know, sort of earn and fight what she did. And then, you know, even Peggy, is Peggy happy? Is, you know, is she going
to
be happy?
I don't think she actually is really happy.
No, I don't think she can be happy.
She didn't even want to go to the company.
No. I like the whole thing with the guy who when she got drunk and was contemplating going to Paris with that guy.
Yeah,
it's so random. But then that never happened.
Yeah, because that's not who she is.
I just can't even believe that she'd put that out there for a moment.
Yeah. Well, then
I guess she was feeling happy for a moment.
Right. And then, but then on reflection, on the last episode where she has that very revealing conversation with the artist about, you know. You know, when he tries to sort of make a comment about women and, you know, those type of women who don't have children or who stay home and have children. And she was kind of like, well, sometimes they don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. Sometimes. And it was like, I know I like when the characters sort of emerge and you get sort of a sense into what their inner thoughts are. I think, the stuff with Don going and driving off, I think is really kind of interesting. Because basically he's doing kind of what he's done before in the past.
Yeah.
He's encountered a, you know, something that's not working for him. And so now he's got to go out and, you know, be the wild man and go in on this journey to find out and figure out what it is. But,
would you say that Mad Men is an important show to AMC?
Not as important as Walking Dead at the moment.
But I feel like
it opened the door.
That was the first blast off. Like, hey, AMC has great content.
Well, let me ask you this. Which is a more important comic book, Sandman or Swamp Thing?
Which is more important to comic books?
Yeah.
Which era of Sandman?
The first era.
The Golden Age, Silver Age Sandman? Yeah.
No. The Neil Gaiman.
The Neil Gaiman one? Which one's more important?
Yeah.
That's a tough one because you know what? I'm not gonna lie. I've never read the whole entire run of that, but I've read a lot of Swamp Thing.
Yeah, I think Swamp Thing opened the door for all those other comic books to come. But people don't always remember that. But opened the door for Watchmen. Opened the door for Sandman.
You're talking about the Alan Moore run.
Yeah, but people, you know, always go to the Sandman because it's such a brilliant book and everything. But there are always these things that come before that sort of open the doors. And I think this Mad Men certainly opened the door for AMC, but, you know, would you have had Mad Men without Sopranos?
That's true.
That's true.
You know, would you have the Sopranos without, you know, I don't know, whatever else, but...
without HBO original or Dream On.
What else was on there? No, but because the main guy came from Sopranos.
Yeah.
And, like, same thing. You wouldn't have Breaking Bad without, you know... What would it have been? X-Files.
Yeah.
This is where that kind of...
But yeah, we're lone gunmen. You can throw that in there, too. Yeah,
there we go. I don't know. So...
I love the pacing of that. I really wish I can watch all of Better Call Saul, but I missed it because I missed the second episode. I usually watch it... I'd watch it on time, but then this one, I was like, I'm going to wait till it gets on, like, 5 episodes on demand so I can just watch it straight through. So I watched the first one, and then I waited, like, 4 weeks.
You waited too long.
And then... The second episode was gone. I was like, well, I can't just jump in.
When does On Demand start to delete?
Apparently 4 weeks on that one.
Oh, wow.
Well, they tell you when they're going to pull it down, but I think it's like 4 weeks. But that was a really good...
So you got to be on top of that.
That was a surprisingly good show. I thought it would be good.
Don't tell me about it, but I know everyone's saying really the great was.
No. I got lucky. Last year, my wife and I, we went up to New York City. We saw Bryan Cranston on Broadway.
Oh, great.
Doing LBJ.
Cool.
In the play all the way. And it was really good. Michael McKean, who plays Saul's brother, was in that play as well, playing J. Edgar Hoover.
See, this is what's amazing, is that, like, yeah, we have great filmmakers, but we're in a great, like, television era.
No, you know what I mean? Yes. So it's the golden age.
So it's almost like films have to work harder.
I think films definitely have to work harder.
What's the best TV show in the last year that you've watched?
In the last year?
Yeah, it's just... I mean, we could go back.
I mean, really, I've been playing catch up I mean, I love, I've been, we've finished up the first season of House of Cards, and I loved House of Cards, but also, like, you know, I run into people who work in politics. I'm like, I don't like House of Cards because it's like, that's the negative part of it. But I like the evilness of it.
Now, the first and second, the third season quite as good as the other two. But I really like House of Cards.
Now, whenever we drive into DC, I just have the House of Cards theme song in my head.
Yeah.
He is so good in that. And she is so good in that. The two of them are just pretty amazing. It's just so well written. And it's so much fantasy. It's like how you'd like the world to really kind of be, to imagine that they're these really, really evil people and that they're doing these really, really terrible
things. But it has to be based off of something.
Yeah, it has to be based off of some type of reality.
That's how Superman started. Someone saw someone lift up a car and they're like, oh, that's a Superman.
Okay. That's exactly how it
is. And then the myth builds on. No, you never heard that?
DVD,
there was something like that.
I'm like really behind on DVD because I even have like the HBO Carnival. I've never seen any of it, but I have it on DVD, and I'm like, what? How? I haven't watched so many things.
It's on Netflix. Okay. You know, the series that I got into after it had run was Veronica Mars.
Oh, yes.
And that was really
especially
good.
The first season.
I really love Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
Because it was fun, but serious. You know? Yeah. And I need that mix.
And I like the characters, and I like the humor in it, and it was just... You know, I enjoyed looking at, you know, likewise Alias. When I got onto Alias late and I started watching that on DVDs. And
yeah.
The same with Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, I did just finish Daredevil. And have you seen it? I don't want to spoil it. Carol hasn't seen it yet, but I'm going to spoil it.
I haven't seen any.
Five episodes in.
I swear there's a time, and this is what I'm going to say. It's what I like Veronica Mars. It's fun and serious. But I swear there's a time, and might have been the whole entire episode of Daredevil, where everyone was whispering. Everyone's like, when you have the Kingpin, Kingpin's like, I have this father, and I never, like, and then we go to, like, the cops are all whispering, and then, like, everyone in the Foggy Nelson and Murdoch, they're all whispering. I was like, dude, is everyone just whispering in this episode?
Is this filmed in a library?
Is this what it means to be a serious show, everyone whispers?
Is this filmed in a hospital zone?
Don't tell anyone.
I like the show, but I'm like, everyone's whispering on this one.
I like the show. It really kind of picked up when...
But Carol hasn't seen it yet.
When the Kingpin got in.
Yeah.
But the tonally, he, you know, unlike Batman, who's, there's this sort of this mystique about everything, he just kind of shows up and beats the shit out of people.
And just destroys
people. He starts wailing on people. And
the anger is there.
It's like, wow, this is like really kind of brutal.
And I was watching Daredevil with my friend Cooney's, who's a cinematographer. So we get the we're not criticizing, we're making notes of it. And we're like, man, so Brooklyn is just yellow? Is everything just yellow? And we're like, okay, because the thing is, we use that same gel to use the lights. So we're like, oh, I guess we're just gonna light everything.
Now, here's a question: are blind people, do they have more exposure to the yellow? That would be interesting. I don't know the science behind it, but that would actually be really interesting from a cinematography standpoint.
Do they see yellow?
I'm just saying, like, is the yellow enhanced more or something like that?
Apparently the world he sees is a world of fire.
And then he hears stuff.
That would actually be cool if they did some cool color effects as to how a blind person sees.
There was a pretty cool effect. When you check it out, you get to see the world of fire.
And he sort of looks sideways and cocks his ear.
Yeah.
I think I hear somebody.
Everyone's just whispering.
Start whispering.
Like, serious. That's why, at least, like, when you hear Veronica Mars, there's different. You have the black dude that's all like, yeah, yeah, yo.
Yeah,
you
know, everybody talks different. Everybody's a different character.
Because, like, it's just like the
and
thing.
Weevil.
Everyone has different.
My wife liked Weevil.
Yeah. I was actually in line to communicate with him to be in my film, but the film never launched. But he's a pretty cool guy. Vincent Capra was his name.
Francis Capra.
Apparently, he was in what? Boys in the Hood or something? Or the Night Bronx Tale.
Bronx Tale. Have you seen The Flash?
Have I seen the TV show Flash?
Yeah.
I saw one episode.
Just one episode?
Because it was leading into iZombie.
I have Arrow on DVD seasons 1 and 2. I haven't cracked open.
These are lots of time dedication for these things.
Yeah.
I guess I won't even ask about Gotham.
No. I saw the first two episodes of Gotham. It has to really be... Because when you're comparing Daredevil and then Gotham, it's like one of them is a...
I'm behind. I just finished Breaking Bad last year.
That was a good time.
That was a good time.
Because I get to relive with her watching all of Breaking Bad. That was like a great, just like, oh man, oh man, oh man, this is great, this is great.
There's some incredible moments in that show, just like beyond anything else on television.
And these are the tough things to do in film, in motion picture, when you have 2.5 hours or 1.5 hours to do that, to have these moments, you know, to live with these characters.
There was a moment in Breaking Bad that it just struck like a Kurosawa film.
It's
where he goes down into the crawl space to get the money, and the money's not there.
Yeah.
And he starts laughing.
Yeah.
And she sort of backs away.
You get the, like, that high
and
angle tape.
The drama was just like, it was like incredibly cinematic. And it was just like, wow. I'm feeling goosebumps now thinking about it.
Then those moments are really amazing.
Yeah. It's part of it is because you're so invested in what's going on.
And that's what I love. That
draws you in.
To bring in comics, too. That's why I feel, you know, we're going to close the show with this statement. That's why I feel that the...
it's Joe's show.
Joe's show. But that's why I feel the comparison of the Watchmen, the movie, as opposed to reading the book.
Yeah.
It's the same thing because it's a murder mystery for 13
right.
issues. But you don't get to invest that much time when you watch the movie. So you feel the changes.
But it was still a good movie.
But like to me, like I was like, oh, but I really wish I can really feel that time passing by. Where can people find you real quick?
Where can you find me?
Yeah.
Real quick, it's alljournalism.com. At alljournalism, my other Twitter account is Frolix, F-R-O-L-I-X, Mike. And that's how you can find me.
Awesome. Thanks for being on the
this
show.
It's always
a blast. And went by way too fast.
Yeah.
Too fast.
Yes.
So this show is brought to you by Astray Productions. Check out them at astrayproductions.com. Check out my work at joecarabeo.com. SoundCloud/Mr. Bandit. That's me.
It's just a slash.
Check out my films at 1-shots.com. Carolyn, what they got for you? Tell them about the Carolyn.
Yeah, we have Curls Studio, curls-studio.com, and then if you add a slash and then curls, so curls-studio.com/curls, you can check out the comic strip. I'm also on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn.
She's all over.
Google
She's
Plus. All over. What else? Vine. Everything. Social media.
All that crap.
Yeah.
Look up Carolyn Bilewski.
And so is this podcast. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, whatever,
and also,
it's out there.
They found it.
Yeah.
You guys found it, but also, I don't really educated in like promoting the podcast as much, but I've heard if you rank and also write a comment or something on iTunes, it helps to bump up the ratings and everything. So if you enjoy the Carolyn and Joe show, give us as many stars as possible and let people know and tell the world.
Give them some love.
Yeah, I love love. Mike, thanks for being on the show, man.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Very welcome. Very welcome.
There you go, everybody. That is the end of the show. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
Be excellent to each other. Good night.
See you at AwesomeCon.